different question, because then all the aspects of intonation and, you know, the friendliness, the tone, the nuance, being able to handle irony, being able to learn as you go. The problem with AI interpreters is that it doesn't learn as it goes. If I'm interpreting as a human and I make a mistake and I get a side eye, a side look from my colleagues, and I know, oops, this is probably not the right term, and then I'm going to, you know, revamp my efforts to actually try and look for something better the next time it pops up. AI doesn't do that. So that translates into poorer quality. But I too approached this exercise, having been an interpreter all my life, with that stance of, oh, it's never going to be as good as humans. And as far as accuracy, it's been very humbling. AI is doing a pretty good job when it comes to accuracy, at least in terms of, you know, how would you find it here? So really, really promising.
Great. Well, we're off to a killer start here. I will just mention there was an issue with the live stream, so we're back live now, and we'll post the full recording after this for anything that got cut out. But thank you for your patience, everybody. I told you there might be some hiccups, but I don't want to keep that from us moving forward. Let's go on to the next question here. And kind of keeping with the same topic of human and AI parity, I guess, or comparing the two, can AI interpreters effectively capture and convey the emotional nuances and empathy that human interpreters bring to the table? If so, how? I myself am very interested to understand, like, what advancements are happening in this place.
Yeah, and it's really important. In a variety of different settings. But what we're seeing based on our research is AI has the inherent capabilities to express different emotions. You can get AI to express happiness, sadness, empathy. The challenge is AI understanding when to express those emotions, and then how do you navigate when you're going across cultures? Because different emotions are expressed differently based on cultures. The other thing that we're seeing is it does a decent job if you ask it to sort of convey something, a certain emotion, from a sentence by sentence standpoint, meaning, you know, if the doctor says, I want you to take medicines every day, it can do a pretty good job of you know, making sure that it's delivered in a tone that the patient understands you have to take it every day. What it doesn't do a good job yet is figuring out which words to accent, meaning, right, I want you to take medicines every day. Mm. Having them understand, like, the everyday part is very, very critical. But it has the inherent ability to convey different emotions. I think the trick is it understanding when it needs to, you know, convey those different emotions. And then the whole cross-cultural piece is extremely complicated as well, which it hasn't figured it out.
Interesting point you raise about the emphasis put on some words, right? And we all have been through the experience of watching a movie with subtitles, right? When you go home, let's say you don't speak the language in which the movie is playing. When you go home and you're trying to relay to somebody else what happened in that heated moment, you say, oh, and then he said, you're not supposed to be here. Again, you mimic the same emotion that you heard, say, in German, but applying this, you know, to the sentiment, the words that you read, which were bland words, right? So part of the nuance is going to get lost, of course, if it's just a machine doing it. But if there's enough of the original sound in the back, people listening to the dialogue can still employ and apply the same emotion in like manner. So this is really, really interesting. Now, what AI does better than humans is handle very emotional talk. When things get heated, when things get aggressive and so on, because it doesn't have a dog in the fight. It's not like the interpreter thinking, well, did I hear it right? Oh, it's getting heated. And then you start to get, you know, worked up. AI doesn't care how fast it's going. It doesn't care how complicated it might or might not get. So it doesn't bring into the picture that emotional aspect that usually is there. Now, of course, and the example I always give is, let's say I show up here and I say, oh, yes, and I never wear black, right? And of course, you see that I'm wearing black. So I'm being ironic, right? And but for you to understand that, you have to have a visual component as well. So AI so far has only been based on audio. But to extend to sentiment analysis and so on, you need to start, you know, playing with video as well, because you need to be able to analyze facial micro expressions of the face and things like that. So we're still a long way from that. But it's, again, given time, anything's possible, right?
Yeah. It's improving every single day, all of this crazy stuff that's happening out there. So the rate of change is constant. Change has always been around. But what I think is different nowadays is the rate of change. It's just happening so fast. The advancements are happening so fast. I'm very curious to see what's going to be happening next year, 5 years from now. Keeping on the area of comparing human and AI, I'd like to understand, because we talked about certain things that AI does well, certain things AI doesn't do well, but maybe we can elaborate a little bit more on what specific domains or settings, in what settings do AI interpreters actually outperform human interpreters? Or is there any setting where they outperform human interpreters, and vice versa, of course?
You know, Tucker, just back to your, the pace of change is so quick. I think it was Bill Gates said this. We tend to, sort of overestimate things that we think are going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years. Like, this is going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, but then it usually takes like 10 or 15 years. And we tend to underestimate things like that will never happen. The next thing you know, you look around like, wow, that occurred quicker than we thought. I think there's a little bit of that in AI, meaning people might be overestimating the impact it will make on interpreting. But if you look at long-term, there's some really interesting and exciting things that I think AI will bring to the table. As far as our research goes, in terms of how AI has been sort of underperforming compared to humans, it's clear if there's any sort of conversation that's rapid, unstructured, maybe there's multiple participants that are talking over each other, we've seen that AI has had a hard time deciphering, you know, who's saying what, especially if it's interpretation that involves multiple or rarer languages. If it's a, you know, situation, a conversation that maybe it's lengthier, it's very information rich, there's not as much, you know, cultural context needed, maybe have separate audio channels so that the, you know, AI can discreetly understand who's saying what. It tends to do a better job. And that's why I think this whole thing is just so complicated, right? When people make statements, okay, AI will replace humans' interpretation. And Vondra, I'm sure you can give plenty of examples. Interpretation is not singular. There's so many different cases, so many different situations when you think about interpretation. I think what we need to, you know, figure out is which cases does AI lends itself to do really well, if not better than a human, and then which cases it will never do as good as a human.
Absolutely. And again, we tend to think about this issue in very binary, in a very binary manner, either or, right? When in fact, the best use for AI so far would be to aid interpreters, to help interpreters do a better job. So in a context where you have human interpreters, it's not either or. You could have an AI assist sort of product that converts all the units of measurement for you, that confirms the numbers, that gives you the exact title of someone that you misspoke. Or it's like, it's akin to having a colleague sitting by your side, but only one that has immediate access to all the information that has been uploaded anytime. It doesn't take any time to go over the glossaries and so on. It's like having a very, very top performing, so to speak, colleague sitting by your side. And in that, AI outperforms humans any day. The ability with which it can compare and contrast and do the math and give you the numbers and so on, that's a great thing right there. And again, I jumped the gun a little bit in my answer to the previous question when I said, again, AI handles emotion better because they don't have anything at stake. So speed and things like that. What AI doesn't do is learn as you go in the course of the event. And that's a big part of interpreting. Learning as part of the meeting and so on, and being able to go back, take something back, explain what's going on, and of course latency plays a deterrent here, because what Deepak just described, you know, having a very rapid fire kind of interaction is still limited, but that's a limitation that ties back in a way to latency. Of course, an interpreter will have sometimes a 2-second latency trying to come up with a better sentence and so on. It doesn't really matter. But the minute the conversation gets very rapid, they know where to drop a sentence and go to what, you know, they know how to prioritize. AI doesn't do that. And latency is still behind you know, is partly the culprit still. So, but again, as my motto here, given time, anything's possible. So.
Interesting. I'm trying to get through as many of these questions as possible today. I want to turn towards more the ethical considerations and societal considerations here. And Evandro, based upon all your years, decades of experience interpreting all over the place at the UN, chief interpreter, I'm sure you have some thoughts on this. My first question here is, well, it's not my question, but I picked it. How do you ensure that AI interpreters remain unbiased and avoid amplifying or perpetuating stereotypes or discrimination?
Great question. I tend to think that AI would be less biased than we humans are, right? Because we carry our own preconceptions and so on. But then again, AI is only as good as the data on which it's based, right? And that data is provided, you know, through tons of excerpts from communication that are human-based. So I guess it would kind of fluctuate depending on where the conversation is taking place, what the context is, who is involved in the conversation, and what has been fed, you know, what the system has been fed with leading up to that conversation. So the stereotypes will be there, but again, AI is not emotionally tied into the conversation. So it's not interested in placing, you know, in giving this word as opposed to that to kind of lead the conversation somewhere else. An interpreter could do this for good reason and for bad reasons. So I guess it will depend on context, and it will depend on the parties to the conversation. But basically, at the end of the day, it will depend on the quality of the data that has been fed into the system.
Well, yeah, moving on to the data, I think that's going to you, Deepak.
Yeah, and I think, listen, AI is just, it's based on the data it's being trained on. And there's several examples right now of AI being used in other circumstances where it shows a biasness because the data is biased. You know, you think about the populations we have data on from a medical standpoint. It's, you know, there's a certain population we have more data on than other populations. If AI is trained on that, there's going to be an inherent set of biasness. So I think we think about it in a couple ways. One is that baseline foundational model that the AI is built on. You have to do your best to make sure that data set is unbiased. I think the other thing is you have to figure out how to augment that data with data that's probably not publicly available that isn't as biased. The other thing I think you have to think about is how do you sort of train and post-train the model to teach it, right? It's sort of like a human in terms of, you know, humans only get better. You train humans, you help them figure out like what's right, what's wrong. You know, you do the same thing with AI, and that's where humans can play a role in terms of training and post-training AI so that it gets better in terms of making decisions and how it acts. And then I think the last thing, which is really important if we're going to be using AI, is having some sort of warning monitor systems, eval tools, that are constantly monitoring, okay, what is the output for AI? And even having some warnings, right, based on the output saying, okay, there might be some risk here. So let's just do a double click to really ensure that we're confirming what the AI is saying.
And just as an add-on, great points, by the way, Deepak. And as an add-on, one thing you can do with AI that you can't do with the interpreters, again, you can try with human interpreters, but it's not going to be very effective, is you can tell them words not to say. You can tell them, okay, what is out of the, what should be out of the question, right? So you can train, you can provide some sort of an audit of the expressions and things that you're not supposed to say, and AI will stick to that. A human may forget, and may, depending on the circumstances, at the heat of the moment, you may be tempted to end up using something else. So you could actually work to one's advantage if you want to, at every iteration of a certain meeting or series of meetings, start clearing the conversation of those expressions that should no longer be used.
Yeah, and there's a right and wrong approach here. The example I like to give is when, you know, Google Gemini first came out, and examples, if you like, show me a picture of your father, the founding fathers of the U.S., yeah. right? They wanted to make sure there was unbiasedness, and then you saw a picture of a black George Washington, which obviously isn't true. So right, I think there's a balance here in terms of how do you address bias in a way that's also just factual.
Right, exactly.
Indeed, yeah.
Keeping on this topic, well, let's move on because we have five more minutes here before Deepak has to go jump on a plane. I want to talk about the future. So my first question is, how do you foresee the role of human interpreters evolving as AI interpreters become more advanced and widely adopted? So AI is here. AI interpretation is here. What does that mean for the human interpreters out there?
Can I try my hand at this first, Deepak?
Please.
I see the role of human interpreters pretty much the same. And the reason I say that is that in most settings where AI will end up being used, these are settings where no interpretation is happening at this point. So the conversation at present is not between human interpretation versus AI interpretation. No, it's between AI interpretation or no interpretation at all. Because we're talking about segments and niches where so far it's been out of reach for most people to even consider hiring a human interpreter. We're talking about, you know, circumstances or languages or corners of the world where the cost was prohibitive to actually have human interaction. Now, the segments that traditionally have relied on human interpretation will continue to use humans for the foreseeable future. And then there will be a mix. Like in medical settings, for example, there are so many interactions that are not mission critical. Like, for example, you know, wayfinding calls where you tell the person where to show up tomorrow for an exam, or just a consultation or scheduling calls or things like that, or billing issues and so on. This can be handled by a machine. And as a matter of fact, these are the kinds of meetings that interpreters hate to do anyway, right? Also, I've witnessed votations and election meetings and so on where for 2 hours at the UN, for example, the interpreters are limited to saying, well, Lithuania has the floor. How does Lithuania vote? We vote yes, Mr. President. Well, thank you. Going on to next, a machine can do that while the interpreters are washing their hands, right? So I see the humans still having pretty much the same kind of market that they currently have, only with a higher appreciation of those domains where so far only they can be used.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Devangelo. And you know, I look at this, let me do it under the lens of sort of the medical field. And as some of you know, one of the reasons I got into this space is because of my mom, and I saw the journey that she faced in not getting proper language services throughout when she was battling this disease. And part of the reason was the lack of investment. It costs much to provide interpretation and translation services at every point of her journey. And to your point, you could see a world where AI fills those gaps, right? Maybe as she's walking through the hospital and has to interact with the person behind the cafeteria, instead of using a human interpreter, you use AI, which, you know, would be more cost efficient, et cetera, et cetera. But there's always going to be a role for human interpreters. I think about the example where you're a patient and you're undergoing some sort of test, or you're wearing something because of a respiratory issue where you can't clearly understand what the patient is saying, or maybe they're dealing with mental health issues. And those are just the really complicated situations where you're always going to need a human interpreter. I also think, again, maybe this is under the lens of just medical interpretation, there's a huge opportunity to almost even focus the role of the interpreter more on cultural broker and advocate. There was an immediate trust that was always formed whenever my mom did get an interpreter, because that interpreter spoke her language, they shared the same background. And one of the things that's missing in healthcare is trust between the patient and the providers. And so I do also see a world where, you know, you basically, the interpreter sort of raises up a level and is more an advocate for these patients and helping them navigate the journey and doing things that really add additional value to the patients.
Great point, Deepak. Indeed.
All right, let's We got 2 minutes. Let's squeeze one more in here. What are the potential long-term implications of relying heavily on AI interpreters for global communication and cultural exchange? So we talked about the implications for interpreters themselves, but as a society, as an industry, just generally speaking, put your futurist hat on and tell me what you see happening 5-10 years from now.
Yeah. So, Ranju, don't mind. I'll maybe just take this first.
Sure.
Whether we like it or not, there's a lot of companies getting a lot of money to invest in AI to do interpretation. It's not something that we can say, stop, it doesn't make sense. There's companies investing in it, which is one of the reasons why we at Globo are just trying to figure out what makes sense, what works, and what doesn't work, because there could be a lot of bad implications for it. Obviously, the first thing that everyone thinks about is the jobs of interpreters. Right? You know, what kind of impact is this going to have on interpreters? I think, Ivanja, you and I share the same perspective. There's more interpretation that needs to be done. In fact, there's a gap of interpretation that's happening that hopefully AI can fill that. The thing that really concerns me, and I don't know, like, I'm interested in your take, is there's a beauty associated with languages and culture and learning languages, right? And what I don't understand is, as we rely more and more on AI to do interpretation or translation, does that sort of reduce the emphasis of learning new languages and appreciating different cultures? Does it desensitize us humans in terms of like the beauty of language? That's sort of a macro level question that, you know, you think about the future and, you know, is it a scary future where everyone's just sort of relying on technology to communicate and you miss that human-to-human interaction. And then I think in the near term, there is a question about the speed at which we're using AI and sort of the implications of it not being accurate or it having biases, right? I'm hoping that we approach this in a way where we try and figure out how to mitigate those things so that we don't have unintended consequences.
Great points, and points I wouldn't naturally gravitate towards. So I'm happy you brought those up. My contribution here will be limited to a few obvious aspects. Number one, this is totally going to drive the cost of interpretation down in some segments, which then translates into more people enjoying the benefit of translated meetings. What do I mean by that? We tend to believe that people, because they speak different languages, and for Deepak, I think we will continue to very heavily invest in learning languages, because we learn languages for literature, we learn languages to go experience a culture and, you know, date somebody or whatever the situation is. And speaking the language of a place where you are makes it, you know, makes the experience totally different and so on. But you would expect that when you tell people that they can now well, let's say you go to India, where everybody has been educated into English, you would expect people not to really insist too much on speaking, say, their natural languages. The minute you offer something that's affordable and that allows them to, you know, go back to their original languages, they totally say, well, I want to speak Hindi. I want to speak Kannada. I want to speak Tamil. We've seen that in some of the experiences that we conducted. And it's amazing to see how enabling the power of that technology is, because again, it gives you the power to express yourself as you really are. The point I always go back to, when I speak English, I'm a different persona. I have limitations in my ability to think and convey my ideas properly, no matter how many years of training I might have had as an interpreter. If I'm speaking Portuguese, it's immediate. My true personality shines on, and there are things I can only say in Portuguese, right? So I think it's going to be, at the end of the day, a very empowering technology in terms of, you know, making it all more affordable, but at the same time, keeping the players in place that really do specialize in some niches that AI cannot go into, but also enabling people to be their true selves.
Very well put. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate the time today. Deepak, I know you got to go catch a plane here pretty soon. For those in the audience that are still with us, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to figure this out and post the full recording afterwards. So I'll start wrapping us up here. Ladies, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today. This has been an episode of NIMTY Live. My name is Tucker Johnson, and I'd like to thank our guests, Evandro and Deepak. You can reach out to them at their email addresses, which are shown on screen here, or you can visit the websites of NIMTY.com or helloglobo.com to find out more information about what they are up to. Really quickly, before we head out completely today, if you want to learn more about large language models, we have a really interesting event with a really interesting person. My colleague Yorick is teaching about breaking down large language model use cases. It's going to be a very practical episode next week, so make sure that you're signing up for that and joining live on LinkedIn. And with that, I will bid you all a wonderful day, and we will see you next time.
Cheers. Thank you, Tucker. Thank you, Deepak. Great conversation. Happy to be here.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Safe travels.
Ciao.
Bye.